Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Just before we jump into the episode this week, I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections, like the main Thrive community feed, where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones, because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are Thrive events, there are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section, and then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well, and in the knowledge hub you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days, so if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program, there's a toolkit, there's understanding the brain science, and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Hello and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today I'm going to be talking with Anastasia, who's in Essex, UK, and she is 228 days sober today, which is amazing. Well, welcome to the show, Anastasia. Lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us a bit about you before we go into your story with alcohol and sobriety?
Sure. So I'm 37 years old. I live in Essex. I'm a mother of twins, and I am currently pursuing a career in psychology and counseling. I'm studying and learning a lot about counseling, about mental health. This is something that I've always wanted to do. So finally, with all the years of personal experience, and I've been working in different industries with different people for 15 years, you know, starting from 18. So, yeah, that's the current situation.
Yeah, which is a lot, right? Mum of twins. And so are you studying full time or part time? How does that look?
I'm a distance learner.
Yeah.
Because it's my second degree, and I did my first degree as a full-time student attending university and did all the fun things back then. But it's easier for me now to just do it at my own pace. I have my deadlines, but I'm a completely, you know, by myself doing it from home, from my own comfort. So.
Wow, sounds fabulous. The reason I probe is because I would love to do something like that myself. So, you know, it's interesting for me. How long does that take you to, it's a degree. Are you doing a degree level or diploma level?
Yeah. So I didn't have to do the foundation year because I already have a degree. Although the first degree is in financial services. Don't ask me why. So yeah, I skipped the first, they let me skip the first year. So I'm in the middle of level 5, which is second year.
Yes.
3 years in general.
Yes. Wow. And so it takes you 3 years. And how many hours do you have to do a week for that?
Well, I aim to do at least 20 every week.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Yeah.
While the kids are at school and, you know, sometimes it gets harder. I study in the evenings. I even study at night if I have to.
Yeah.
But I love it. You know, I look at it in a different way now. I don't have this feeling, oh, I need to do that. I do sometimes, but I just love getting the knowledge. I read a lot. I read a lot of scientific papers as well. I have to go through them for my assignments and all of that. So it feels different this time. I did my first degree, graduated in 2010. So 14, 13 years later, it's a completely different journey now for me. I love it.
Oh, it's so inspiring. You have inspired me. I'll be Googling this when I get off the call.
You should.
I'll be DMing you going, right, tell me about this or that.
Sure.
But also as well, and I'm really looking forward to getting into your story, but having that bit of, you know, sobriety under your belt must be hugely impactful on your ability to learn and dedicate the time and concentrate on what you need to do. You know, I imagine that plays in really well to that. But before we hit that more recent bit, tell me about your relationship with alcohol. How did it start?
It started at a very young age. I think I was about 15 when I tried, and I still vividly remember the details. So it was a very strong beer. I think the percentage was 8.5 or 9% of alcohol.
Wow.
And I remember we shared it with one of my friends, a small bottle, and instantly obviously got drunk straight away because I was just 14 and a half or 15. But at that time, obviously couldn't do much because we were still, you know, kids. Later on, we knew the places in my little hometown where we would be sold alcohol. So we started with beers and ciders, and it was like everyone was doing it. That's the thing. That was the setting, the general setting. You would have no idea that it was wrong. Like, you know, it was wrong, but because you're not 18 yet, you know, it's funny how it's okay to do it after. So then, I started living independently since 18. That's when I slowly started moving to wine, learning about wines and Prosecco. I worked in catering industry for the first 6 years, and we had lots of wine tastings. I thought it was so, you know, sophisticated, like to know your wine. Like within the last few years, I even started buying special glasses for, you know, for Sauvignon Blanc and, you know, Riedel and all of that. Yeah, so I was that kind of person where, like, alcohol would follow me anywhere I went, anything I did. Oh, is it the morning activity that we're doing? Oh, we're still going to have some drinks after. Yes, we will. Wedding, birthday, kid's birthday, someone else's birthday. Oh, it's something. It's a celebration of whatever. Alcohol all the time, every time. The only thing I would say, I wasn't crazy about starting early. Like, I still have that limit, and I praised myself so much. Like, oh, no, until it's at least 3 or 4 o'clock. None of that will go into my body. But then you would get hammered and, you know, carry on until the early hours in the morning. And yeah, I think that independence. So I was studying. First, I went to college, and then I went to uni. That was so... And I worked full time. I studied full time. I worked full time, and we partied full time. So you probably heard it so many times when you wake up at 5 and you have to be somewhere at 8:30 in the morning or something like that. So that was part of my life. And again, all my friends, everyone that I met, it was just so normal. Like, it would just accompany you everywhere. And I never saw a problem with that. And I got myself into some very dangerous situations. Thank God nothing happened and I got out of them, but I still remember what they were, and those situations where you would get so drunk that you can't remember getting back home, you lose your purse, you lose your belongings while taking some random cabs, and God knows in the morning you wake up, oh, how did I pay if I don't have anything with me? You know, lost my IDs so many times. Like, it was just the mess, but it was a fun mess. You know, when you catch up with your friends and you say, oh, can you imagine, we got so drunk last night, we had like 5 bottles of red wine for 2 of us, and then decided to go back to mine, and then we knocked on the wrong door, like, oh, how funny was that, like funny drunk stories, you know. And I look at them now and I, you know, still feel it's, I mean, it was part of the experience, and that's the way I was back then. But yeah, it was. So since probably 17, 18, systematic drinking. Probably 2-3 times per week, and then the weekend. When I met my husband, we would still go out. I mean, we slowed down a little bit with parties and clubs. It was more like getting in the pub together with friends, or, you know, going to birthdays, but they were a bit more chilled, but still getting drunk, like drinking, because none of us had kids. We were free, you know, we worked, we lived our lives. And yeah, and I think the worst part started happening after I gave birth to kids. That's when I slowed it. I always had this little voice inside my head that I shouldn't, or you should stop now. You should stop. No, you shouldn't. But I never listened. So I think in time, this voice just grew stronger. And once I had kids, obviously I slowed down. I didn't drink when I was pregnant, none of that. But then when I got back to it, I was just, there were some traumas when I gave birth. Like, I went to a very horrific experience. Like I almost died after I gave birth to my twins. And being a mom for the first time, having 2 babies, you know, you have no idea what you're doing. And then you know, going through this, I think I didn't work those things through. And they later started, you know, I had these moments where I would just drink to forget, drink to run away from something. And I always turned to alcohol. It was the matter of sad day, bad day, stressful day, good day, perfect day, amazing day. It didn't matter. It was like my best friend. It's always there for me, no matter what. I can always turn to that, you know. So yeah, 20 years, solid 20 years of systematic drinking.
Yeah, which just like you perfectly put it, you know, it's just what we did. I feel very strongly about that. I resonate with that. And I think everyone that listens to this podcast and that we see in this sober community, that is the biggest challenge, I think, which is letting go of that framework of, but it's just what we did. It's just what people do. And now it's not what we do, but that feels very uncomfortable because yeah, a lot of people are still doing it, you know? Yeah, I think when you mentioned about the birth trauma, it takes me back to that time when I was a mum for the first time and had my own traumas. I think lots of women, to be honest, find pregnancy, childbirth and mothering has its moments that are traumatic because it is such a big change in your life. And if you have a complicated pregnancy or even if you have a complicated journey getting pregnant, or perhaps you can't get pregnant, or you have a complicated journey getting pregnant, which I did, and then you have a complicated pregnancy perhaps, or you might have a complicated birth, or even if you don't have any of those things, but you just end up with a perfectly healthy baby or not healthy baby, and it's just, there's no manual, right? It's just suddenly there, and it's like, okay, now I am supposed to know what to do with this little person. And all the after effects, I think, that happen, you know, how much your life changes. I'm not saying that dad's lives don't change as much, or sorry, not saying they don't change, but I don't think they change quite as much. It's not quite the same when you are typically off work, you know, on the maternity leave, and you're kind of in that house with the baby, and you know, that is your life, you know, that is a big change.
Plus, there are, so, like, in society generally, there are so many expectations as well. It's to look nice, to cook healthy food, to, you know, to be present, you know, play with your kids. It's like so many to-dos when at the end you look back and you think, where was my time? You know, like, and you have to make sure you do all those things. It's not about trying to be perfect, but it's just you're on this constant, like, I have to do this today, tomorrow. I have these deadlines. Although sometimes you can just skip a few things. Maybe it's just me. I put a lot on myself in that sense. Mm. And, you know, when you have a bottle of Prosecco chilling in the fridge, you think, oh my God, when the Friday comes, I'll have a bit of rest and then, you know, I'll just relax with alcohol. So it was a big helper at that time. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, and I agree with that completely. And I think a lot of people would resonate with that as well, that there are a lot of expectations and external pressures, whether you're a parent or not. There is a lot of things that might be unwritten rules, societal rules. And more recently for me, I'm so much more aware of the world of neurodivergence. And I realize now that those kinds of, you know, neurodivergent brains aren't wired for the way the world currently runs, you know, school system, working system, the environment and all of those things. And so if you have any of that in your home as well, then that's extra complexity to navigate. So I think everybody is feeling that pressure, you know, financially there's pressure, socially there's pressure, relationship wise there are pressures, you're juggling many things, you then have family, or, you know, you have things or people that you need to look after, and you just need to spin all the plates. And I feel like no wonder we find alcohol alluring and attractive, because for that few hours on a Friday night, we can just bloody switch on. We can not have to think about it. Yeah. And you can totally see why that relationship, you know, that possibly that more emotional dependency forms and is then complicated to sever. You know, it's because when that's gone, well, what else do? You have to learn how to navigate all this stuff on your own, usually with an empty emotional toolbox. And it's also really hard as well. And it's just, I think the way that, you know, life is set up in a way, it's like a big trap in a lot of ways, because it's so difficult. So how, you know, for you, when did it get too much? What happened?
So I think in the last 2-3 years, so I quit this February. So 2 years before, that little voice that I mentioned earlier, I felt it was getting louder and louder. And I, in 2021, I had a really bad COVID. And when I was recovering, I don't know what happened mentally, but I was just feeling really, really down. I had very bad, like, depressive symptoms. My anxiety was just, I started having panic attacks that I told no one about, you know, because I think I felt the sense of shame, and I didn't want to be this person who is failing at, you know, his emotions. And I just knew deep down that I had to cut down. Not in a million years I would think I'll have to quit. No. I'll cut down on alcohol, but I'm still having it. You're not taking that one thing away from me. This is mine. Like, I love it so much. I love the taste. I love the buzz. Yes, the hangovers can be quite, you know, painful, but I'll get through them. But I started noticing that I would struggle not with the hangover itself that much, but with the anxiety, they call it. Yeah. What would happen? So if I had a drink on Saturday, would have few. Recover on Sunday, that would be the most annoying thing, because the whole day would just be wasted pretty much. And then on Monday, I would feel really anxious, stressed, irritated. And that would last until Thursdays, I would say.
Mm.
And then I would feel fine on Thursday. Oh, Friday, I can go again. Oh, that must have been something, you know, one off.
Mm.
But then it reoccurred so many times. And that's when I thought, but as I said, I thought I have to cut down maybe once per 2 weeks.
Mm.
And I've managed to do that really well. But at the end of the day, you go to a party, you go to birthday, you go for dinner with your friends, and you still end up being drunk.
Yeah.
Because you're having a good time, you don't want to leave at 9:30, you know, kids are looked after, you know, everyone is fine, everyone is safe, we're just having a good time. Let's have another one, let's stay. And then you wake up, regret it millions of times, and then you think, okay, well, next time I'll drink in 2 or 3 weeks. And then after 2 or 3 weeks, you'll have this one glass of wine or two glasses of wine. You'll be super proud of yourself. But then again, it's another event that would make you, because I enjoy it. You know, I like the feeling that it gives me. Temporary. I know it's temporary. But I like it so much. My brain has got this habit, you know, of feeling that way. And I love it.
Mm.
And no matter how many days I will not drink or weeks, I'll still crave that feeling and I will end up having it today, tomorrow, or after a month. So I struggled with that for the last 2 years and I looked at everything. I've always exercised. I've always been a healthy eater. You know, I read a lot, like I educate myself and, you know, I have kids and family. I looked at every aspect of my life except what was right in front of me. Like I never considered that as a problem. That alone may cause all this stress and, you know, depressive days and mood swings and everything. So it was very gradual for me to just come into that realization.
Yeah, I resonate with this so much because I really remember that phase for myself, and I wonder if everybody goes through this phase, you know, where it's like, I just need to learn how to drink better.
Yeah, I need this skill.
Just need to learn how to do it. I know I can do it. And, you know, at least you tell yourself, you know, you can do it. But the truth is you can't. And that's very difficult to accept. It's almost like you've got to have all of those paper cuts, you know, in order, you know, like I always think it's a bit like a death of a thousand cuts in a way. You've got to have all those little paper cuts of getting it wrong. I was the same as you. I feel so proud of myself if I could have a glass left in the bottle of wine. I mean, for God's sake, that still means I drank 3/4 of a bottle of wine. That is a lot of alcohol. But for me, that was a huge win. Like, aren't I the best?
And you look at those people who could get away with one glass and you think, boring.
Yeah.
You know, you used to think those people, they were the odd ones. Like, I would never go and mingle with them. I'll just go where the old crowd is and where the old buzz is.
Yeah, that's right. You're just gravitating towards your own kind, aren't you? But that very much relates to that whole, I went out and I managed to have a few glasses of wine, and what a brilliant person I am. I've cracked it, right? I have cracked the code. And then the next time you drink, you're blackout drunk, you wake up, you've cut your head. It's like, what has happened? Why has this happened? And it's just that constant, the highs and lows of that type of trying to moderate that drinking is, it's so like one minute you feel elated, the next minute it's huge disappointment. And it's really like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I do this? Why does everybody else manage to do this but me? It must be my fault, you know, and all the those kind of self-sabotaging thoughts and just putting yourself down. And it's horrible, really, when you look back on that. I think when you step away from it and you've been sober for a while and you look back at that, almost like that frenzied moderation mode, where you're just trying really hard to make it work. And you just think, God, that's so exhausting. I'm so glad that I'm not in that place anymore, that I've managed to let that go. And
yeah.
You know, I was like you. I had been doing fine, but had been feeling quite good and quite smug about my drinking, only having a couple of glasses of bread on a Thursday night, you know, because in some nights I could have a whole bottle or two bottles, so I was doing very well. And then I went out with girlfriends on one weekend night, and I just, the wheels came off, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
I woke up and I was like, oh my, and I don't know, I just that voice that you talk about, that I think, you know, a lot of us again relate to, that voice just said, it was shouting at me, this is enough. That is it now. This has to stop. And I think that's when I leaped into sobriety, and that's it. I haven't looked back. But for you, you said the voice got, you know, louder, and you were on that challenging road of trying to moderate and sometimes achieving it and sometimes not. What was the very last night for you? Like, I mean, how did you, like, what happened when you, did you wake up and just say, right, that's it? I mean, what, how did you get to this point where you got 228 days of sobriety under your belt?
So because I started my studies in 2023, January. So I had to read, I mean, it's a very complex subject to study, and you have to do a lot of reading, and English isn't my first language. I have to sit there a lot of the times with dictionaries and like translate things. And I would, last year, the 2023 for me, it was very exhausting mentally, physically. I was just always tired. It doesn't matter what I did. I was always tired, and I was just tired of being tired. And so we celebrated Christmas. My friend was here, and we drank every day, not getting drunk, but we just had, you know, we had lots of wine, and, you know, wine with dinner, go into the market, Christmas market, have a couple of wines in there. And then a few days after, I got very, very sick. I had a terrible sore throat, and we were going away with my husband and kids. So I spent New Year's Eve with terrible fever, and obviously I didn't drink. It got to the point where I had to go to the ambulance and get some help, because I was just, it was horrible. I can't remember having something like that in, you know, in a very, very long time. And so I was prescribed antibiotics. These things, they usually give you a little break. Oh, that's good. So it's 2 weeks. Oh, I won't drink for 2 weeks. But then it turned out it was 3.5 weeks that I didn't have a drink. And I noticed that, oh, I actually feel so good. And then I knew there was an event that was coming, and I knew I would have to have drinks. How pathetic is that? Like, why can't you just have tea, or, you know, have Coke? I'll have to drink. Right. So I had a bottle of Prosecco to myself. We had dinner. And then I woke up next day feeling fine. And I thought, oh, wow, that's the most hilarious thing. When I read about it after, I thought it was so cool that you don't get hungovers all the time. I thought it was cool. I thought I learned, you know, how to handle it. And I said, well, I don't have a problem. You know, I'm fine. Just had a whole bottle to myself. I'm fine. But then a few weeks after, I had this break again, and I caught myself again feeling good, you know, feeling energetic, just feeling good about myself. And I tried to get myself, you know, into this busy mode, doing different things so I wouldn't need to have a drink. And then a few great things happened during that time, and I was just so excited. I was just overwhelmed, and I had this little voice telling me, you see, like, you're excited, you're happy, but you don't need that. But then I had this little devil on my other shoulder saying, no, come on, you need to celebrate. I mean, come on, this happened. I basically managed to sell a few of my paintings, and I was just so excited. And I said, okay, well, I called my husband. I said, can you pick up some wine on the way home and we'll celebrate? And we did. And I woke up next day and I thought, oh my God, that was the worst decision ever. I had anxiety for about 5 days after that. I think because I started realizing that it was all wrong and it didn't really make me feel good as I thought it did. I think that's what made it even worse. Like I would get anxious before I would pour a drink. I would be so anxious and I would just, you know, have this first few sips and, oh no, it's fine. You know, the first couple of minutes, it gives you that light buzz and you think, oh, it's fine. It's all good. Like, get rid of that anxiety. It's going to come back later. Times worse, but it will deal with that later, right?
Yeah.
And I promised myself I'll read a bit more of other literature as well, rather than just scientific papers and books. So I was looking for something very light, you know, maybe humorous. And I got this book. Can't remember. It was basically woman. She's from Fulham, I think. And she's writing her diary, how she quit drinking. And I remember started reading this book and I remember thinking, oh, wow, well, she drank every day. Well, she definitely has a problem, right? Yeah. I still have the gaps in my, you know, week. I've got routine. I'm fine. But I quite liked it. I could, you know, relate to quite a few things in there. And then the recommendations gave me another book. I read this book very quickly. And I got myself that second book. And oh my God, I felt like that book was written off my life story. I felt like someone has been watching me for the last 20 years and not even as an outsider, but someone has been in my head. All the insights that she shares, things like little things like, oh, walking into this room, going to this event, walking into this room, and the first thing you scan for the bar.
Yeah.
Like, where am I going to get that drink? Because I need this drink first before I start, you know, functioning. Although I've always been quite good at socializing, I don't really need to, you know, I'm not shy. And I thought, and I just sat there, reading it, I was like that every 10 to 15 minutes. God, oh my God, oh my God, that was so, oh my God, this is me. And I think that book was about 350 pages, something like that. But I tried to read it, you know, as much as I could, because I, with the kids, with everything, I only read before bedtime.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think I would nail it in, I don't know, 3 days. And then I woke up one day, halfway through the book, I remember, or maybe closer to the end, I woke up one night and I went downstairs and I said to my husband, so you know how I've been trying to cut down? And he said, yeah, and I think you've done a good job with that. Why, anything happen? And I just turned to him and I said, I don't think I'm going to drink anymore. I'm sure he wasn't very enthusiastic about that. I'm sure he was just, I mean, bless him, he supports me in everything I do, all my crazy ideas, anywhere I go, he will support me. He said, okay, what do you mean?
Like forever?
I said, I think so, because I've had so many insights in the last couple of weeks and so many things started making sense to me. And I need to get better mentally. That was my main goal. I said, you don't know, because you go to work and I do everything from home.
Mm.
You don't see me going through this stuff. And even if you are present here with me right now, in here, I could be literally dying, like burying my whole body in this, in wherever, in the sand, and just wanting to disappear. I appear fine.
Mm.
You know, but it's what's inside that's killing me. And that was, my husband call it now, oh, overnight success. I mean, it happened just like that. I think I would still get to this point with or without the book, but I don't know when that would happen. I think I would spend another year maybe trying to cut down. I think that's what would happen.
Please put me out of my misery. What is the book?
Happy Hour. I'll send you the cover once we're done. Happy Hour. Yeah, just let me quickly.
Has it got a lady on the front with a holding a balloon?
That's the one.
Yeah, A Happier Hour by Rebecca Weller. Yeah, just because I know people that are listening will be like, what is the book? I probably will forget to put that in the show notes. So anyway, that is awesome. Isn't it amazing that a book can be so impactful and just really change things? I just think it's amazing that there is all this.
But I also have to add, when I started reading this, so it was a second book related to, you know, alcohol drinking issues. I also started reading the science behind all of it.
Yeah.
I started listening to different podcasts. I started listening to medical professionals that specialized in addiction. So during the day, if I had some, you know, free time or would go for a walk, I'd listen a lot of it, you know, during the day, and then come into bed and just, it was like that book to me seemed like I was just reading my own diary, and I've never had a diary in my life. So I can definitely say from day one for me, it was just enormous amount of educational stuff. And I forced myself, I'm going to read that story. This story was horrible, like some, you know, when people hit the rock bottoms, and but if it was hard mentally, it was stressful at the times, and sometimes you just have to stop like for a couple of hours, just, you know, analyze it and like, okay, well, you know, this is someone else's life, but it could have been me as well. We're not, you know, no one is protecting you from anything, and no one can ever say, well, you are fine now. It could be years before you hit the rock bottom. It could be tomorrow. It could be now already. But I think the rock bottom for everyone is, you know, it's a different thing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. I always felt like I was in this game of roulette where I just felt like I had this overwhelming sense that everything could just go horribly wrong next time or the time after that. And what would I do if that happened? And how could I ever forgive myself if something happened? You know, maybe I did something stupid, or maybe I fell over and hurt myself in a way that was really, really damaging. Or maybe I would make a careless mistake, drunk, without any real intention, just a silly mistake, perhaps. And that would cost me a relationship or my relationship, you know. It just, I was so frightened of that. I felt so frightened. It was almost like I knew that this thing that, like you perfectly described in the beginning, that was fun and a way of connecting with all your mates when you were young and at college, and, you know, when you're bored at the weekend and you're not sophisticated or grown up enough to do anything else, you're just drinking and having a laugh, and everyone's, you know, those special friend times or girly times, you know, that's part of growing up, isn't it? And maturing, and that's part of youth, and that is all dressed up in fun, under the label of fun. But at some point, that turns into something more sinister. And whether it means that you get dependent on alcohol and you need it every day to function, you know, absolute worst case scenario, or whether you're in what we now know is this kind of more grey zone, which is, you know, maybe not drinking every day, or maybe moderating 80% of the time or 90% of the time, but that 5, 10 or 15% of the time, the wheels come off and something happens, or you get too much anxiety, or you drink more than you want, or you have, you know, it damages your mental health, and it's just not worth it. That is much more sinister, much more difficult to manage. And I think it's the uncertainty when you're drinking alcohol. And I work with a lot of people in that moderation phase, right? A lot of people come to me to help them when they're in that moderation phase, when they know they should stop because all the signs are telling them, their own inner voice is saying, stop, this is good, you know, but for whatever reason, they can't let go of the glamour, they're too scared of the FOMO, they tell themselves the story that they love it, I was exactly the same, I loved it, you know, and all of that stuff. And it's just like, no, I need to drink better and I need to crack that because I cannot let this thing go. A lot of people get caught in that space, if you like, but ultimately there is never freedom in that zone.
It's just a vicious cycle.
It is a vicious cycle. It's not a case of if you make a mistake. It is always a case of when you make that next mistake. And that's quite frightening, I think, because I feel like in that situation, it's almost like you're sort of standing at the edge of a cliff with a blindfold on or something. Like you're not really in control. You think you're in control. There's an illusion of control. It takes a huge amount of effort to build that illusion of control, but ultimately you are not in control, because one day, whether that's sooner or later, or whether that's every 3 weeks or every week, you will overdrink and you will regret it and you will feel bad. And I think if we could find the magic pill to get people out of that zone and into, just get them into the sobriety car, then we wouldn't have this problem and we wouldn't have this podcast, would we? But that is the challenging part, isn't it? That is the really difficult bit about this.
Yeah.
And so for you, education was crucial. And I think it is crucial. I think it's a huge part of that early journey. And particularly, you know, like you, I was the same. I devoured anything neuroscience. You know, I didn't even know that I enjoyed this stuff until I got sober and I got into all the science. But I felt like learning the science of alcohol and how it affects the brain, you know, the cortisol and all these things that I didn't know before, it was very validating for me because it helped me, it shifted the blame away from myself. Like, I am not broken, nothing's wrong with me. This stuff, let's call it out, is highly addictive. It is designed to be addictive, you know. It's kind of not our fault that we're addicted to it, but getting to that place where we start to listen to that inner voice, taking the steps to take action to try and improve our relationship with drinking, or, you know, or take alcohol off the table, essentially. I think that's crucial, and that's taking responsibility. What else did you do in that first kind of 100 days from what you can remember to support yourself?
Yeah, just to add one more note to the education, and I'm just going to be very short and quick about it. For the listeners, also what really struck me was I found a few short documentaries about marketing behind alcohol that I was blown away. I'm just going to leave it at that. So for anyone who is interested, and if you want to find out more, yeah, marketing and how it's all presented in society and the history of it, that was incredible. Yeah. So the first 100 days, I remember the first 3-4 weeks felt really good. And oh my God, I felt like I was, you know, on the top of the world. So much energy, da da da. But then I would, you know, I'd done this before. I would have these breaks, and I knew already that period of time, 3 to 4 weeks, it would make me feel good. Mm. Little did I know what was waiting next for me. The emotional roller coaster that followed shortly after the first month was just, I mean, as a woman, being emotional, just I'm generally very emotional, and plus, you know, you at the very different stages of the month, you can be 4 or 5 different people, I would say, right?
Yeah.
On the top of that, you the neurons have been formed. You have this habit of drowning your emotions, any emotions, with alcohol. And when I didn't get that, I was not having it. I didn't know what to do with myself. literally, I did not know what to do with myself. I would go for longest walks ever. I would pray the weekend would be over soon. It was very challenging. And I've been through so many challenging, you know, situations and emotionally as well. And I remember this time after 3 weeks, me and my husband decided to check out the new restaurant in our area. And I remember that that place didn't serve alcohol. And I thought to myself, that's just great because I'm going to go there. We're going to have some food. And I mean, you can still bring it with you, but they don't have it on the menu. When we went there, I remember opening the menu and there is this list of all my favorite wines, the cocktails. And I just went to the waiter and said, what happened? Why you suddenly have drinks? To which he looked very confused because people usually complain about the opposite. Like, why don't you have any drinks? And I just said, what happened? I said, oh, well, we refurbished the place. You know, we've redecorated and it's just, you know, it's been rebranded. And now we have this extensive list of wines. And I thought to myself, oh my God, what have I got myself into? And that evening, that date night, one of the worst date nights ever. Everyone around us, it was Friday or Saturday, obviously everyone was drinking. I remember this lady, because the tables were quite near each other. Yeah. I remember a lady next to me, she ordered a glass of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. Like, it's my go-to wine.
Yeah, always. It was my go-to as well. Yeah.
And when the waiter was pouring that wine, I could smell the wine from the next table. When I glanced at her, you know, having that first sip, I could feel it.
God.
Physically could feel the taste of wine in my mouth. And I had with, I was sitting there with a glass of lime soda. Mm. And I thought, okay, that's fine. I'm going to get through this. I know it sounds very dramatic, but I just want to describe, you know, what exactly I was feeling. And we ended up waiting for food for so long. And my husband, he'll have a beer now and then. He's never really bothered. And he said, oh, I'm not going to have anything. I'm just, you know, just going to be supporting you. I said, no, it's fine. Beer is something I'm never really, you know, tempted with. So you'll have your beer. But I looked at everyone and suddenly I started feeling, like, I remember feeling very hot and very uncomfortable because I think visually I saw alcohol and I craved it, like, just naturally. I say it now, it was natural reaction, I think. And we left straight after we finished our food. We just left and said, I'm really sorry. I can't, like, I'm just going to be honest. I can't do this. I can't be sitting around all these people drinking. I can't. But as I said, my husband is super supportive and he was like, no problem. We're going to go. We're going to have. And I remember we came home. I went to shower because I was all glammed up. I took a shower and I made myself a pot of tea, herbal tea. It was one of my favorite teas as well. And we sat there watching Netflix. And I remember I shed a tear. I was so happy with myself. I knew what was coming. I knew it's going to be hard, but I was so proud of myself. And I was just so happy to be back home, you know, comfy with my husband, feeling good, feeling normal, and knowing that tomorrow I'm going to wake up having no regrets. Yeah. And a few days after that, I won't suffer, you know. That was like the first month. The next few months were, I would say, up and down. I almost lost it once because I just thought, why am I even doing this? Who cares? I mean, but everyone drinks. Everyone is fine. You know, I had this, like, I countless moments like that when you just doubt yourself and you're not sure if it's going to lead you anywhere. But then I started reading about neuroscience as well and about the effects the alcohol could have left, you know, and how long it can take for you to recover. Is not, that's when I say, that's when it's funny when people say, oh, I can do a month without it. Like, I can do dry Jan, no problem. You try to do dry Jan knowing that at the end of January or beginning of February, you're going to have that drink is one thing.
It's totally
Yourself, yeah, telling yourself that no more, honey, there is no more wine for you.
Yeah.
And try and live with that for at least 5 minutes. I mean, yes, that's the most challenging thing. So I think the first 100 days, which makes it about 3 months and a few days, they were very, very challenging. Sugar cravings. My sleep was very up and down as well. I don't know why. I read so many stories where people would feel improvement in their sleep in 3, 2, 5 weeks. I was struggling with that for a while. Yeah, just emotional roller coaster. Yeah. And then apart from that, life is still happening. You still have 2 kids to look after. Something happened there. School. Oh, are we booking holiday? Oh my God, how am I ever going to go on that holiday without drinking? Oh, is that bill paid? Like all those things. This is still happening. And there is no getaway now. You just deal it raw. Like these are the emotions. And you have them, and it's like, it felt sometimes like you were just cutting yourself with a knife.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
For me, the first 100 days, they were a few days where I felt, you know, like a butterfly. I feel so light. I'm full of life. And then the next 2 weeks would be like, oh my God, I just want to just leave me alone.
Yeah. Oh, I think I love the way that you describe all of that. I think it's so powerful. And that's going to be so reassuring for so many people listening to this, right? Because that is a lot of people's reality. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody deals with this differently. But you're absolutely right. 30 days is no time. Hasn't even scratched the surface. I mean, it's a good break. Don't get me wrong. It's better than nothing. But in context of the long-term journey, it is nothing, really. You know, things don't even start to feel like they're shifting a bit until after you've really got over those 100 days, I think. You know, it's like having the exposure to those raw emotions and having to deal with those real life, you cannot hide anymore situations, and practicing how the hell you navigate them, which, like you, I felt completely lost with all my emotions. I sometimes would burst into tears at 7 months, and I think, I don't even know why I'm crying. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know why I'm crying. And eventually I turned that into, like, I would have a bit of a, I made it a game for myself. Whenever I would have big emotions come up, or I would cry, or if I'd cry at an advert or whatever, I'd kind of had to laugh at myself, and I'd say, isn't this just so crazy, this whole journey of life? Or, you know, I would sort of try and make it feel lighter for myself, because a lot of the time, I understand myself really well now, but I took so long to build that, you know. It took so long. It took more than 2 years for me to get comfortable with, how do I really feel? What do I really need? Who really am I? What's a good situation for me and not a good situation for me? Like, all of that stuff, it just takes so long. And I think it's always worth really emphasizing that, you know. When I read about the neuroscience, and I read that it's 12 to 24 months just for the alcohol to physically, you know, be undone in your body, if you like, that's mind-boggling. Yeah. I know some people would get to 50 days and think that's it, they're fixed. And look, it's no shame on people for thinking that, because you can feel really good at 50 days, and 50 days is really good. And even 100 days is really good. You know, 220 days is amazing, but it's still all so beginning stages, you know. And it's like, sometimes I think we put so much pressure on ourselves to be fixed at a certain date or at a certain time, or because someone else on Instagram looks really fixed. Whatever many months. And it's like, no, it could take so much longer than that. And I really am grateful for you sharing that. How has your life changed now that you don't drink? So obviously we talked a little bit about the nuts and bolts of those early days, but what have been the benefits for you?
Oh, endless, really. I think the first thing I would say, for me as a student, So last year I could read for a few hours, you know, do a bit of work, and I would get exhausted. And then the thought of, oh, doing that for Monday to Friday, 5 days a week, that's just thinking about that made me exhausted. Now I drop the kids off to school, I come back, and if I don't have work, no clients, nothing like that, I sit there from 9 till 3, like forgetting to eat sometimes. My brain just is capable of, you know, it's like a sponge, just, you know, getting all the information and understanding that information. And I can, so the capacity of my brain has improved, and I believe it's obviously it's still improving. So I was amazed at that. I thought, wow, I am, because we're not getting younger, right? Getting older. And the cognitive abilities were obviously damaged by this poison, as I call it now, but I can see that I can still be good at some things. And only now I feel my sleep has finally passed this. Actually, it's funny, I did a post about it the other day. I naturally wake up every day approximately at the same time. And I forgot the last time I set the alarm.
Yeah.
I don't need the alarm anymore. Obviously, if I have an annoying 6 a.m. flight from Stansted, that would require me to, you know, get some help. But I just love it. I wake up. That's another thing. I would need at least 8 hours of sleep, and I would still feel exhausted. As I said, it didn't matter what I did. Now, like last night, I went to bed around 12, although it's late for me, I have to say. But I woke up 10 to 7 and I'm fine. I don't need those 5 cups of coffees anymore. Like, I'm fine. I can function.
Yeah.
So energy to me is just, it's obvious, but it's so vital for me because I like being busy. I like being energetic. Having 2 kids always, you know, they keep you on your feet, you know, as you know, because you're a mom. But you also have to be present with them as well. You know, whereas I remember the times where, like, you would start the day, for example, it's Saturday. Shall we go there? We'll go to the market, have some lunch, do the activity. But constantly through that day, you just think, oh, can't wait for the 6 p.m. to come because I will have that drink. And I feel so sad for those moments because obviously kids have no idea what you're doing. They feel a lot, but they don't understand it yet. And then I wonder how did they see me, you know? How did they feel? Like going through all these things with mommy and like mommy will just end up, you know, I'll still be with them. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I forget about them. Oh, that's it. Leave me alone. But I'll have a glass in my hand, you know, that fancy glass, you know. And now that's probably one of the most important thing for me. I am present. If we're doing this now, I am enjoying this now. There is no after, what we're going to do after, how I feel and what I'm going to, we are doing this now and we're enjoying it. And it creates better memories. The time you spent with everyone, it's more meaningful and productive. And it sounds crazy because it's that's what your life's supposed to be like.
Yeah.
But it was not. Because you knew at the end of the day, you know, cannot wait.
Yeah.
And now it's, well, this is my life. And I feel like I'm finally living my life, not surviving through the week. I used to hate those things where you would realize that, gosh, I feel like I'm only living on the weekend because I'm waiting for the weekend to arrive so I can have a drink. Whereas now you live every day because life is, it can be, you know, it can be so short. I lost my brother years ago, and he had alcohol problems as well. And even that didn't stop me. I was in denial for so many years. I think the whole family was. No one wanted to see that. No one wanted to admit. You're the first person that I actually say these things to. And even that didn't stop me. That was a very particularly difficult situation because I lost my brother. And then after a week, I found out I was pregnant. So it was like, am I happy now? Or am I, what am I supposed to do? So I think while being pregnant, I didn't drink, but I think my body and my brain, everything inside of me was just waiting for that moment to, you know, when can I finally get back to drinking? Because I had so many things that I didn't work through. Even that trauma of losing someone that is so close, it was like part of me. So many regrets in that term. But as you said, it's part of the journey. It's, you know, I am who I am today. Be present with my kids, my family, my studies, learning my real self, my, as I mentioned earlier, raw emotions, the ones that you run away from before with, you know, down in that glass of wine or whatever. You learn so much about yourself. You know, I believe when they say kids teach you a lot, and they do. They do teach you more than you teach them at the end of the day, because these are little human beings and you want to make sure they grow up being decent human beings and doing that, because no one knows how to handle parenting, right? No, there is no book, there is no manual. Mm. And being in this presence, I am learning a lot about myself. I'm learning that, oh, this is how I actually can deal with stress. Oh, that was actually what caused me to be anxious, but I've somehow managed to, like, you learn this. As obviously, I'm a psychology and counseling student, and I had a therapy for about 18 months myself a couple of years ago. So I know I have the tools, and I'm learning about that. And it's incredible for me. Like, I just love, it's like I'm getting to know real me, because starting at that young age, you know, you don't know you.
No.
You have different habits, you have different lifestyle, and you're just constantly somewhere else. Now, I love being by myself. I am good with just being alone and doing my things. I don't need to run to see that friend for, you know, for dinner and have a few drinks or there. I still go out, don't get me wrong. I still go out and socialize. But, like, I feel like I've started living my life honest, being honest with myself. Mm. I am no longer harming myself. Hopefully I can recover. My body will, you know, I'm doing everything in my power to help that. I just find meaning in a lot of things now, if you know what I mean.
I do. I really do. I think there is a great comfort in the peace of not drinking.
Yeah.
And it feels, weirdly, it feels like a privilege to not be drinking now for me, because like you, I just felt like it was a bit of an awakening, really. It was a big wake-up call. It was an awakening for me. I felt like I suddenly started living life. Like, I wasn't really living up until the point I stopped drinking, which is crazy for me, right? Because I stopped drinking at 41. So that's a lot of life that I'm just being driven by external needs and not internal stuff. And now I feel driven by internal desires and motivation and internal comfort. And I'm like you, I like being on my own. I like having boundaries. I like all the little fascinating subjects that I'm into and learning about them. I just like life on my terms. And part of liking life on my terms is accepting life on life's terms, and that things will come and go. And that is just part of life. That is just part of the ebb and flow of life. It sounds like you're just in a really strong place with it. And you should feel so proud of yourself. You know,
I am.
Yeah, all of us that do this journey, really, when everyone's pointing the finger pretty much and saying, what the hell are you doing? You must be crazy. You're going to be so boring now, blah, 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 blah. and all of the marketing, and you're going against all of the rhythm of drinking, which, you know, we're very, very, very surrounded by, to step out of line and decide to turn around and go the other way and to do it differently.
Yeah. I mean, I had a couple of people asking me, oh, but why? You obviously, the famous one, you didn't seem that you had a problem. Well, yeah. You know, no one seems that they're having a problem. And well, I can still exercise. I can still do all these things. I can, you know, I can do all of that and still have a drink. And I always think I could too do those things, but at what cost? To end up being exhausted from being exhausted, just constantly feeling anxious, tired, irritable, you know, and scared. Because, you know, every time you have that glass or a bottle or two, you know you're harming. Once you study those things, once you educate yourself and you find out, oh, actually, there is no such thing as a safe dose.
No, yeah.
So, you know, I said, fine, you can, that's one thing I'm never going to do. If you want my help, if you want me to share my story, I'll gladly do so. But I'm in a no place to judge. And I get this, there is this stigma around sober people that we are some sort of snobs that look down on everyone. We are not.
No,
we
just not at made all.
Different choices. I mean, who am I to judge? I was getting hammered literally 5 minutes ago myself. So this is not about judging. And I remember for the first few months, I didn't tell anyone I got sober for the first 3 months, probably. It was only me and my husband. And then after, you know, slowly, I said, well, I am not drinking anymore. And people were surprised because, oh, the anxiety. Oh, yeah, when you're feeling a bit on the edge for the next few days. Well, I mean, doesn't everyone? And you're like, okay, 2 years ago, I would think, well, hell yeah, everyone feels that way. Why not? Let's have another one. Whereas now you think, well, it makes me feel so much better without. And when people say, well, can't you just have one? I can. But what for, you know?
Yeah.
It's not my intention to, I mean, we just talked about this. Well, let me get this. I need to learn how to handle my alcohol, right? You can handle it for the 6 months, but then you'll be back in your old ways again.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it's just a matter of your personal realization, what it does to you and how honest you're going to be with yourself. I get this a lot now when people say, because I share my story on TikTok, and a lot of people say, well, I can relate to this so much, and I feel that it's becoming a problem, but I don't know what to do. I always say, this is already the first step.
It's awareness, isn't it? The awareness. Yeah.
You've already done the first step. Just take it from there and go from there. It's much better than sitting there in denial.
Yes.
Cover it all with, well, everybody else feels that way. So that means I'm fine. You never know what the person is going through exactly.
Yeah.
Because we meet once a week, twice per month, and everyone seems fine, don't they? But
of course, you never really know what's going on behind closed doors. I always say that, you know, you never know. Even when you look at people's Instagram, even when people come around to your house for dinner and they drink really well, nobody really knows how anybody else drinks. No one knows. All you know is yourself, right?
It's like that book, the third book that I read, the quitting memoir of, I can send it to you after. That book was heartbreaking for me. I read it. I cried. I felt so emotional while reading that book because it was a book about the person who went to rehab 5 or 6 times. She had a good job. She presented herself so well in the society at work, and she had so much potential. But alcohol, the addiction, ruined her life. And it's an incredible book. And that's another example of how, you know, you can appear.
Yeah.
I think they call it a functional alcoholic, actually. Like you do your duties.
Yeah. You can do the big run in the morning. You can have all your green juice. meet work appointments or see your clients, do all of those things. But yeah, there's a fragility there when all you're doing is waiting for that time when you can escape reality, essentially. Yeah. And yeah, I was the same as you were saying about you can do all those things and you can keep alcohol a bit in your life or a lot in your life. But for me, I got fed up of living a suboptimal life. I wanted optimal. I want to feel good. I want to wake up fresh. I got fed up of being at 60 or 70% most of the time. Tired because I'm recovering from drinking, or just not feeling and eating badly and not taking my vitamins or not doing this, that and the other. And it's hard enough to do those things in life anyway without that added pressure of being hungover or hating yourself because you drank too much at the weekend and you're still trying to get over the anxiety of that. And so yeah, I really wanted to live, you know, why can't we live an optimal life? Why can't we live 10 out of 10? Like, we can choose that. Again, not to misinform, life will still be life and there will be not 10 out of 10 days. But most of the time, you can choose to live an optimal life, and alcohol just doesn't play into that story. Alcohol is not optimal, it's suboptimal life. So I just wanted to take that path of optimal, and I'm so glad I did. And I think everybody is really glad that they did. Once they get over that initial, you know, they get further up the hill or, you know, or the mountain of what all this really means and how you remove alcohol from your life, you do get to a place where you can stop and look around and look at the view and think, yeah, I'm on the right track here, and it's all looking good and I feel good. You know, and I think that's, it's so, I feel like I gave myself my life back, you know, which is quite a big thing to say, but.
Yeah.
Yeah. So amazing conversation, so much wisdom, and so much that people will relate to in this. What would be, just to finish off, what would be your top three tips for people stopping drinking or staying successfully sober?
I think, so obviously things like education, you're not quitting just for the sake of quitting. You need to educate yourself from all the aspects of it. Remember, you're doing it for yourself and only, you know, for your own health, first of all. But obviously everyone's stories will be different. You will have a lot of free time suddenly, and you need to fill in that time with new hobbies or maybe rediscover the old ones. So these are the basic things. But for me personally, what keeps me going until this day, so I had these three powerful things that I realized at the early stages of sobriety. The first one was that when I counted how many years, so 20 odd years of systematic drinking, that I had to take some time for this information to just sink in into my brain, because I couldn't, it was shocking to me, although I know it, but I never thought about it that way. The second was that the cutting down just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It would only work once you drink less and less, and then you stop. That might work. But drinking less this month and getting hammered next month, it's just, that's not what, you know, limited consumption is. And the third one, whenever I had doubts, I barely have them nowadays. When you have doubts and, you know, you just want to reconsider this whole sobriety thing, is after you've educated yourself at least a little bit, you think, well, do I even love myself enough to not poison myself with that thing? And the other thing is, am I going to let that bottle control me? Or am I stronger than that? And I'm just going to, you know, leave it, not do it, be stronger. And that's affirmation, if you want to call it. It's with me almost every day now. And I'm prouder every day that, no, I'm not letting this thing to control me. It controlled me for so many years. now I am in control of my life. And as you said, life will still happen, but I would rather deal with problems as they come rather than running away from them. But I am no longer be controlled by this. Like, this is like the things that powerful to me, and I've written them down. And sometimes I open my phone and I read them through again and again. They're very short. I wrote them in just a few words, but I just read them. You have to also, another thing will be, that's more than three tips, obviously, but have a goal. You have, like, my goal was mental health. Being a student of mental health, and I work in mental health industry as well, I must be, you know, a good example of that as well. I have to work things through. So for me, that was my goal. Maybe for you, maybe, I don't know, you got your license revoked once you were, you know, drunk driving, or maybe you harmed someone. You need to get better at your behavior, or your family issues, or kids, your work. It has to be your own personal goal. Just have this, like, so you stay, it will help you to stay focused.
Yeah. Love that.
That would be my top 10 tips, whatever.
Yeah, no, I really like those. I think a lot of those are mindset orientated goals. I think they are so powerful. I really think if you can get into a good mindset where you set yourself a good story and you believe it, you know, you really buy into your own story. And I think that managing your own expectations, that it's not going to be a walk in the park, you know, that they're going to be those ups and downs, I think that's hugely important. Knowing that moderation does not work, and even if it feels like it works, what is the effort that you're having to put in to drive that moderation engine? It will be a lot. It will be a lot, and it will cost a lot. And not feeling like you're being controlled by a substance that the marketing industry spends $6 billion a year on to make sure that you pick up that drink and poison yourself and feel shit the next day. I mean, why would you want to be controlled by that? So I think they're amazing. And I love the personal goal as well. It's not just about the days. It's about what's that personal goal connection for you. Amazing. So if you're open to it, how can we find and follow you? You said you're on TikTok. So tell me about your, what's your Instagram and TikTok and things?
So I am, I'm an artist, but I do it as my hobby. This one hobby that kept me sane for so many days and weeks and months, and just generally gave me a good sense of peace, I would say. So I'm Anastasia Abstract Artist, or the other way around, on Instagram. I am fresh and sober on TikTok. I started that account recently because whilst I was educating myself, I found so many people hide all of that, what we've just been saying to each other. You know, they hide it and they don't have like anyone to talk to. So I think sharing it publicly, so many people reached out, and it's just incredible.
Oh, I think that's lovely. I feel the same. I feel like that about this podcast. And, you know, it just feels so nice to share information, share stories, share healing. I think it encourages healing. And I think that is a lovely thing. A lot of us need healing.
Isn't it amazing how many of us out there?
Yeah, definitely.
It's so many people.
Yes, there really is. There really, really is. And also so many people that don't even know that they need to be out there healing yet. You know, they're in that denial phase, right? Or they're at the very, 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 very start of that awareness journey. So I think this big wave is just going to grow and grow. It'll be a tsunami, you know, in the next few years. Just so many people trying to kind of detox from all sorts of things, whether it's screens, you know, gambling, screens, alcohol, just all the things that provide temporary artificial relief, really.
Yeah.
So on Instagram, it's @Anastasia_abstract_artist, and it's fresh and sober on TikTok. I do try TikTok, but I just feel like, maybe I'm 5 years too old. I find it so overwhelming. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm a bit, I'm kind of quite comfortable in my Instagram zone, but TikTok is great for this stuff as well. Thank you so much, Anastasia. Thank you so much for your openness, for sharing. I think you explain things in such a beautiful way. You're a really good storyteller. And I wish you all the luck in the world with all your studies and juggling all the things you're doing, and being a great mom as well and partner. So yeah, thanks so much for coming on my show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. And thank you to everybody else. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.